kind of session is talking about strategies for teaching peace and resolving conflicts in both schools and in homes. And I kind of want to, you know, deal with issues that are important to you, and thank you for coming. And you know, whether that, I can share some things that I do. I'm first a little bit about myself. I've taught for 16 years, and I've been a principal for 2 years, in both in the Milwaukee area and in the Minneapolis area. And I'm a district trainer in our peacemaking program in the Minneapolis area, in Edina, where I teach. And I had no idea I was doing this when I got off the bus 2 days ago. But so I don't have any of my stuff here, you know. But I was suggested that they have an opening and I would fill that fine. So, and I said fine. So some of the information that I have deals with. If you haven't rolled the tape, you could roll the tape. Deals with schools and ways of building community and solving conflicts. And then we can also get into some strategies for dealing with conflicts, and it can be useful both for kids and for adults on some verbal skills and techniques to help express what you want and what you feel, and kind of a way to come to compromise or come to a win-win situation. So, but why don't we just start out by just, if you could just kind of just, since we have such a small group, talking about where, maybe like just your name and where you're from, and maybe what you'd like, you know, what prompted you to come to this class, what you'd like to get out of this, what you would most like to me to cover, what we could, you know, discuss. So,
I'm Kristen Galante, and I'm a elementary school librarian K-6 in Lebanon, Seattle, but my school is in the Edmond School District, and I'm here just because it's an ongoing problem in schools of resolving conflicts, and it's always interesting to hear new strategies, and I hope that maybe if we write you, you can send us some handouts.
I certainly
can. I'm one of those learners that like to write things down.
I certainly can do that.
Good.
Yeah. I have a lot of stuff.
Okay. I'm Joyce Hendrickson, and I'm a grandmother who's had my now 20-year-old granddaughter living with me the last 2 years, and which has been very nice. And yet, you know, there are always things to be learned in communication. I think maybe what I'm looking for here is in the communicating, learning more about the things that are important to the kids. Sometimes hearing it just from their side, I don't get the full picture, and I want to hear it. I just want to hear something.
Sure.
And I do have younger grandchildren.
I'm Sandy Kramer from Longview, Washington. I have two children, 19. They're not twins. They're both adopted, and they're 5 months apart. And there's never been much conflict between my kids. And my son, especially, he's often talked about what would happen if he got drafted because he doesn't believe in that. But the one thing I find that my children lack is the ability to then express their feelings.
My name is Lauren Anderson. I'm from Redmond, Washington. I'm a domestic engineer. I have two kids, 7 and 10. I'm interested in how you came to them, to that age group, as well as we live in a neighborhood. And this has just come up this summer. The big boys take over the streets for baseball games.
Yeah.
We need some compromises or something going on. I tried one night and I got, I don't have to take this from you guys, and blah, blah, blah. Oh, you're one of those kids, huh? Anyway.
Yeah.
This is my husband.
Hi.
Hi. I'm Bethany.
I didn't go up, I just washed all my clothes and found them.
And your name is?
Dave Zorn.
Dave, okay.
Sorry to burp in a little.
No, that's great, the more the merrier.
Eating some French toast.
I'm Lisa Thorson, and I actually work with senior citizens in nursing homes, but I live nieces and nephews, and anything with communication, conflict resolution. I think oftentimes the question in the age groups, like, you apply to children, even apply to the residents that work with, and the staff.
I just start off with just a little bit about conflict. And I want to start out with a graph that I've found really, really useful in different types of conflict. And it kind of goes like this. And again, I have all this on handouts that I can send any of you would like that. If you look at conflicts based upon, I found that if you explore the nature of conflict, it helps. And I've used this technique with my class, which is I have a third, fourth, and fifth grade homeroom. I teach in a situation where we have multi-age, so we have more than one grade in a class, and we keep the kids for more than 1 year, which is really good. This is how the task or the goal that, and it's on a scale of 1 to 5. So this is obviously you care really much about the goal and the conflict, and this is you don't. This is the relationship. And again, it's on a 1 to 5 scale. And there are four different ways of looking at conflict. And I think one important way of dealing with conflict is to know which of these strategies is appropriate, because they all are appropriate at certain times. For example, there's something called forcing, which is up here. And forcing means that you really, really care about the goal, but you don't care about the relationship. I mean, an example could be going to buy a car. If you go to buy a car, you want the best deal you can get because you only have X amount of money, and you want to get a good deal. You aren't going to be dealing with that car salesman on an ongoing basis. The relationship is not as important to you as the goal. And so that's called forcing. Some, you know, kids, you know, I worked with, the only way they have to solve conflict is by forcing. They want their way. They don't care what happens. They're forcing. Kind of the opposite of that is something called smoothing. Meaning that you really don't care about the goal, but you really care about the relationship. Maybe your spouse wants to go to a certain movie, and you don't really care what movie you go to, so you know that's fine, we can do that. You want to maintain the relationship, the goal is not as important to you. Some kids that I see always are in this area. They always give in to what somebody else wants. So then on this end of it, we have something called withdrawal. Meaning that whenever there's a conflict, people just sort of go into their cave and withdraw from it. And really, in conflict studies, that's, you know, a very negative way to deal with conflict. Although there are times when, you know, like you're driving on the freeway and somebody cuts you off, I mean, you don't want to force that. There are times when each of these strategies is appropriate in dealing with conflict. Each of them is appropriate. And I think what we try and do in our program is teach kids a variety of ways of dealing with conflict. Because we keep emphasizing that conflict is part of life. And in fact, if there's no conflict in an organization or in a classroom or in a family, then it's not a growing, you know, people are subjugating their needs to, they're not being open. The conflict is good if it's handled constructively. The fourth way, which is up in this quadrant, which is could be called compromise, is the area that we want to get to, and not compromising as in you have to give up something, but kind of a win-win where you maintain the relationship and you also maintain the the goal where you try and get what you want, and you also maintain your relationship. And the idea is that if you engage in bringing up issues, it means that you care about the person. It means you care. And I know that's something that we've really stressed at our school, is that, you know, if you bring something up in the organization of a concern, you do it because I care about the organization, I care about the people who I work with, I care about my spouse, because that's something that we need to talk about. If I didn't care, I wouldn't bring it up. So I have found this very useful in talking about kids. And, you know, how did you solve that conflict? Did you force? Did you withdraw? You know, and the kids can really understand that. I think teaching children and teaching adults to be better resolvers of conflicts is one of the most important roles that schools have, and most important roles that anybody can have, because, you know, the number of murders and violent crimes in the United States is by far and away the highest in the world. I spend time in India, and they have over three times the number of people that we do, and they have far, far less violent crime. And I think that, you know, people in our society, they're bombarded by images on TV and whatnot. And this is when you talk about conflict, and this is the area that most people associate with that. And so we try to move people into other ways of dealing with conflicts. I think maybe we'll start out with a technique that we use at school, and we'll maybe role play that a little bit, and that's on some strategies of a peacemaking program. There are many different kinds of peacemaking programs in schools nowadays. There's a peace table program where kids, there's a certain corner of the room, and they have, kids that there are certain rules, and there's a peer mediation program. Our school has a peer mediation program, and there are certain steps that kids learn, and I think I'll put those up on the board. And again, I have handouts for these if anyone would like those. This is what they would call the conflict. This isn't working. Conflict bridge. And the first thing that kids are taught is to say what they want. The idea goes is that unless kids need something, need to be heard, and adults, what do you want? I want the ball. I want you to spend more time with me. I want Susie to stop teasing me. Whatever. You go to your reasons. Because you kind of explain. And the idea is that when one person does this, the other person is doing it simultaneously. And then the third step is kind of a reflective listening step. And I think it's really key. It says, my understanding of you is. So if we're having a conflict, and if we're having, and I should say that there's a difference in this program between negotiating and between mediating. Negotiating is where you just have the two people who are involved in the conflict talk it through. Mediating is where you have a third person, a teacher, a mom, a dad, a whatever. In our school, we teach all children K-5 these steps. And we have, the first 3 weeks of school are spent largely with community building and with teaching maybe an hour a day on some of these strategies. So we hope that this will be used more, that kids will be able to negotiate their own conflicts by being able to verbally express how they feel. So many kids, when they get mad, they have that rush of adrenaline, and they just don't talk, they act. And we found that it really helps just to calm them down and have them talk through it. And our playground has been much more calm since we've had this going on. We also have peer mediators on the playground, and each classroom has assigned mediators so that if I'm teaching and there's a conflict or something happened at recess, we could go back to the peace table and either the two kids could try to work it out or I could assign a mediator back there. The steps are the same though, so this would be, my understanding of you, Joe, is that you wanted to play with us because you were feeling left out. Okay, and then the other fellow would have to paraphrase what I said. It's a paraphrasing step. It's an empathetic listening step. It's my understanding of you is, and it's really, I think, a very critical step. The next one is to think of three possible solutions. So, that might be something like, generated by the kids, generated by whoever's in the conflict. And oftentimes it kind of is like if you have two kids, they'll think of one. They're trying to figure out like who's going to use the computer, or like at home, who's going to do the dishes. Susan could do it. Susie goes, well, David could do it. And then the third one, you finally get some give and take. I thought that really happens. And then the third, the final step is that you choose one, and then the kids are supposed to shake. I've had so many comments from parents that this is something that when the kids learn these steps, that they use these at home too. In fact, it was so cute. We were doing a presentation at our school at the teachers' convention, state convention, at the Civic Center in St. Paul. We had a little first grader. We're doing this presentation. The kids are role playing, and he's up and says, and his mom had helped us drive over there. So he was like, "Yeah, we have lots of conflicts at home, and between my mom and dad, and I help solve them." And so you understand. But so this is kind of the bridge. We have big posters of the room up. There's curriculum written for each of these steps. We practice talking about how to express what you want. We talk about, just a lot and a lot of role playing. So I want to spend some time during this session kind of just role playing some things too. Any questions on that? Does that make sense or is it okay? One other, so that you've got kind of this area of conflict and of teaching peacemaking, and then the whole other, and this is going to deal a little bit with schools. Another part of peacemaking is by meeting the needs that people have, and I had this book on because I was just reading it. It's a teaching book, but it's got this kind of nice funky title, teaching them to be happy. And it, basically, the premise is from the work of William Glasser, who's a psychiatrist, and that people have five basic needs in their life that they need to have met if they're going to be happy. And those needs are first of all, survival. And again, those of you who are very interested in this, I have handouts on this that I can certainly get you if you are interested in that. So, let's see. And then that just is the kind of the physiological needs and the safety. Safety is a big issue. So there's that. And then there's fun, freedom, love and belonging, and power. And the idea goes that unless these five needs are met, that someone will not be you will not be at peace with yourself. And people have different intensities. It's like the analogy Wade uses, the score of a table. if these are the four basic, assuming that this need is being met, and it's not always so. I mean, in some areas, if safety is an issue, then that needs to be dealt with. But if these are the four legs right here, they all are important in terms of like the height. Different people have different intensities of those needs, so they have different widths. And so, an interesting thing that we do with the kids is, you know, we brainstorm what are ways that you can meet these needs, and you know, which needs are largest. For example, love and belonging. I mean, you look at the gang issues in a lot of larger cities. A lot of kids are not getting this love and belonging need at home, and therefore they'll need to get that somewhere else. You know, some of these needs, and as a teacher, you try and give kids freedom and power to have some choice in how they learn. Like if my objective is that they learn about trees, you know, I might let them choose to do a song about the different types of trees, deciduous or whatever. You know, they could do a poster. I mean, I need to give them some choice. People have a need for fun in their life. You know, they need you know, to think of ways that they can provide that need. So, and this is true for adults as well. I mean, if we have one of these needs that's being thwarted, we are going to be unhappy and therefore engage in conflict more easily. So one thing I'm trying to do for this year is to, you know, in this conflict bridge, maybe talking about not only what you want, but also what do you need? Because you're going to be getting into conflict when your needs are not being met. You know, I had a need for belonging. I want to play in this game. That's why I stole the ball. The philosophy behind some of this is that all behavior is purposeful. I mean, like if you have somebody on the playground or at home who got in a fight with somebody, you know, who got in their car, but they, something motivated that. You need to find out what need wasn't being met, why they did that. I think what we're going to do here is, a couple other things. I just took a class before I came on here, and they said that like in schools, the largest area, the biggest indicator of academic success in a school is the climate present. Is the relationships that are present within the school and the building. The whole idea of peacemaking can be thought of as just building relationships. I mean, that is so important. If the relationships in a family, relationships in a school, relationships in an organization, in a business are fractured and not strong, then conflict's going to come up irregardless. Conflict's going to happen. If the relationships aren't strong, the conflict will not be solved well. If the relationships are strong, you will deal with the conflict well. And so the idea is, like within the place where I teach, how can we build relationships? How can we strengthen community? Because this kind of deals then with community. How can we build community? How can I build community within my classroom? How can I build community within my family? What kind of shared experiences can we have that are positive, that we can build together? One way in a school to do that is through something called cooperative learning, which is putting children into groups and structuring their learning together. And that's what I'm going to quick do right now. We're going to read an article that talks about these four needs. And what I'm going to do is, this is called a jigsaw. And what I'm going to do is I think we'll just have one group. And each of us will take a different, it's going to be on these four basic needs here. And the idea is that each of us will, a couple of us can work together because we'd have more than four, but each of us will take one of these and I'll number you off. And then you will need to prepare, you'll be responsible for coming back to the group and telling us about that basic need. In schools, this is a cooperative learning is a is a wonderful way to get kids interacting with each other. It helps build relationships. It helps build community. And so what we're going to do is that we'll just need to read the paragraph or so that is on your specific need. And then, 5 minutes or so. And then try to choose like one or two key points. And if you want to get creative and like sketch a visual or something, you don't need to do that. Just whatever. Just paraphrase it as best as you can. And we'll get together with the whole group. Now, if we had a whole group of people here, like about doing this in a business or something, then let's say that all the ones were doing the fun need before we got back to your original group, you'd go find all the fun people. And then you would compare what you thought was important in the article with them before you went back to your original group. That's the philosophy behind this strategy. But we will skip that step since we don't have a large group. So I'm going to hand these out, and then we're just going to kind of share this article. And this article explores, again, some of the basic needs that all people need to have to be healthy. Okay, so I'll hand this out. And let's just say that the starting with the fun, this is a 1, 2, 3, 4, and well, let's see, hold it. Let's just go in order. Let's not do it this way. I think love is mentioned first, love and belonging, and then power, then fun, and then freedom. So let's just go in that order. Okay, and we could just kind of go love, power, fun. If you could have to do that.
Sure.
Freedom. And
we just read that sentence.
And love. So the love group has two, as does the freedom group. So just read your section and then think of a couple of key points to share, and then you'll share that little section with the whole group. So each of us just reads a little section, and then all of us will hear about this from each other.
So I should get with the other love person?
Yes. Yes.
Who's the other?
Another love person.
How about if we sort of get our chairs in a little circle? To share this. That's a good deal. Well, maybe we can move around you since you can turn your
handle.
Yeah.
So much for mine.
Did it happen on the trail?
No, it happened walking to Jasper's.
Oh.
Oh, no. Inappropriate shoes.
Now, if this were and this I've seen this technique used in lots of like in church meetings, and it's just a really good way to get people interacting. If we were like a base group, like us four, we each have one section. And before we would come back to our, we'd find what we call preparation pair. We'd find another group that had the same section of the article that I had, and then prepare with them, and then kind of get our presentation ready, and then come back to the group and teach that. And it's been my experience that the poorest teaching techniques that I've, and I have my master's and my specialist, and the farther up in the educational system I go, the worse the teaching techniques are.
Yeah.
I think that as we work with adults, it's these techniques, adults need to interact. They need to talk about what they, and kids really do. And I know that this session is on peacemaking, and I guess what I'm trying to say is that solving conflicts peacefully isn't just learning two or three magic words to say. I mean, those steps there can help getting kids to say what they want and need. It's more of an organizational emphasis. I mean, one needs to look at the health of the family structure, the health of the school structure, and building relationships in that structure. Because I think that's really the key. So, and having everyone's basic needs being met, which is what this sort of article is. So let's, should we start with the love group? Love and belonging group?
Well, love is the need for us to feel, you know, cared by other people, belonging to other people, and get that kind of relationship with our parents and our peers and our teachers. And when that need is not being met, we go to inappropriate and inappropriate means to try to get attention, to try to get this feeling of belonging. And what happens is it, you know, that sort of gets the wrong kind of attention from those that we want to love us, which leads into kind of a cycle of failure. Mm-hmm. And our goal should be to get the sense of love and belonging and caring to the children and people that we are around.
And the idea being that these needs, everyone has these needs, and that people are going to meet them in some way, so that we can meet them constructively, it's a better situation. Mm-hmm. Any more questions or discussion on that? Okay. Power.
Well, as it is, it's probably most misunderstood, yeah, because it's something that many people understand as wielding over others, mm-hmm, rather than that it's more an ability. We have the ability to do this. We have the competence. We can do certain things. And to foster that, there needs to be encouragement. I work in a university setting, a university hospital setting. They've done a lot of personnel work in trying to get us, you know, quality action. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a buzzword. One of the things in the questionnaires that have come out is that, you know, do you feel that you are adequately recognized for what you do? And that seems to be a deficit. And so in trying to do that, you know, well, how can we do that? Well, we can have an employee of the month. We can do, you know, put something up on the bulletin board in our coffee room that, yes, hey, so-and-so did such and such. Wasn't that great? Or we get letters from satisfied patients or dissatisfied patients, mm-hmm, as the case may be. And I found in the particular group that I'm a part of, the patient care coordinators, who sort of is a catch-all bag, find it, you know, they work so independently, yet they interact with so many parts of the whole that it's really hard to get feedback. And we have a hard time expressing feedback. In this last winter, when we had a meeting, and there's one person that we work with when it comes to admitting a patient to the institution. You know, she's bed placement. Do we have a bed? We have this patient in clinic, or this patient in Timbuktu that they want to fly over. Do we have a bed? Can we put them in, you know? And she always is very competent. She sits in a hot seat, and our group recognized her, nominated her for Employee of the Month, and somehow or other, that did a whole lot for us, mm-hmm, when that occurred.
Now, all people have a need to feel valued and to have choices in how they deal with things. Thank you.
Looks like there's a close relationship really between power and love. Is that true?
Power and recognition.
Yeah, I don't know.
Love and recognition and feeling good.
Yeah, feeling valued.
Yeah, validated.
I think that the final statement that it says that the most important of the aspect of satisfying needs is the process, not necessarily the product. And that your power can increase or decrease depending on what you've gone through and to get there.
Thank you. Fun.
It's me. And fun is a basic psychological need, and children, when they're really young, have a lot of fun playing and discovering. And by the time they reach formal education, through fun, they learn more than they ever can learn again, in any one small space of time in their lives. And when teachers say to kids, "We're not here to have fun, we're here to learn," they've got the wrong idea. Because and I'm going to read this sentence, whenever any of us, old or young, discover something new, there's a sense of wonder, excitement, and fun. And there's a real strong connection between learning and fun. If it's not fun, a lot of us turn it off. Don't bother. And parents should remember that and provide a lot of fun and exciting things that help the kids along.
Thank you. And that's true for adults too. Adults have a real need for fun still, and maybe that's why some of us are here.
Right. And it says here that a lot of times adults forget that,
And adult organizations can forget that. And ironically, in schools, I know, like our staff talk about it, sometimes staff forget about it. That we need to have, not every waking moment can be spent discussing the most current issue. You need to, have some fun with your coworkers. So. Freedom.
Well, this freedom and the ability to choose as a child directly relates to the ability to learn so that the kid can, if he feels he has the freedom to make choices every day, and the teacher assigns him homework and does all the tasks that he has to do, and later in work, regular job, as long as he's making choices and realizes he has freedom and he has to do the work given to him, the two fit together and integrate well. But if he feels he hasn't been able to choose and everything dictated to him all the way through, he's not going to accept the task given to him.
Well put.
Here that says the first thing you need to help children realize is that they do make many choices every day. Because face it, you're not going to let a 3-year-old make a heck of a lot of choices.
No.
Although, when we're in my retreat, we have a conflict about what they were going to wear. And I discussed this with my husband, and I said, this is one area where it's not that important for me to have color. And we no longer had that conflict because I gave them the permission to select, their daily attire.
And then he thinks, sure.
Now I know why some of these kids are dressed so terribly.
My daughter was that way. She's a power child, and she got really angry with me, and we'd have arguments before school, so I just said, okay, whatever you want.
And which of those four ways then did you turn to solve that conflict?
Withdrawal.
Well, no, not really, because I said you can dress the way you want when you go to school. Because I knew in my mind's eye that it wouldn't take too long. Then some of the things that she wanted to wear, the kids would let her know.
Kids can
be right. And I found out when my children were teenagers, they were able to make better, selections, much more independent about that.
Yeah, and when she went to school that first day, and I said, "Are you going to wear that?" She says, "Yes." And I said, "Well, okay." And she came home, she said, "I'm not going to wear this again." And I said, "Well, come." She said, "Kids laughed at me." And I said, "Okay." And maybe it was
withdrawal, but I figured it was a self-learning thing.
Well, no, exactly.
Yeah. So she, and she's a, she has a wonderful sense of dress today.
One thing I would like to do before we, before our time runs out, is to role play when using those techniques for solving a conflict. Have it based on at a home situation, based on a work situation, based on school. And we probably need a couple of people to get into a conflict, and then maybe somebody to be the, it could be, to be either like the, either they could negotiate it, or they could mediate the, somebody could have a kind of mediator type of thing. So does someone have something they'd like to propose for that, or?
I got something from, a lot of people here are having, you know, more than family.
Family, mm-hmm. Should we have a couple of kids? Let's see, we could have, what's a common home conflict which comes up?
We've got a cat, a brand new cat, and she is so loved by both children that I know the minute we walk in the door, it's going to be that I want Cher. No, I want Cher.
So who gets to play with Cher first?
Yes. And how long they get to hold her before we have to give her
they
up
use
to
Cher
end.
As a weapon. You know, yes. Put it on her head. It's pretty nasty.
Probably the best environment for the children in Cher.
So assuming that they knew those, some of those steps, or that the, you could teach them, let's say that they come in the door and they both run toward the cat, and all of a sudden it's pushing and the volume is increasing. So if I was going to do you two kind of want to role play those situations there?
You can be your kid. Let's see if you can negotiate, and if you can't, we'll one of you.
What are your kids' names?
Larson and Anna.
Larson and Anna.
Mm-hmm.
So if this were, you know, if you were, Larson, what do you want?
I want the cat first because Anna's always got it.
Anna, what do you want?
Well, I want the cat first because you always get it away from me. You can get that all the time.
Larson, how do you feel, and what are your reasons for that, or what are your reasons for wanting what you do? Actually, I missed a step here because the feel has got to go in there too. So it's what do you want? How do you feel? They can kind of be mixed together, but Larson, how do you feel right now?
I feel that Anna gets the cat no matter what I say, and it's always my fault.
Okay. And
I'm just repeating.
I guess.
Believe me.
And Anna, how do you feel?
It's impregnating.
Well, Larson won't let me have a cat when I want it, and so I never get to play with it. He always has to hold it.
Larson, what's your understanding of Anna?
She just gets the cat when at an unfair time, more time than I do.
Well, what does Anna feel and want right now?
She just wants the cat and wants to be unfair.
That's what happens.
I'm just telling you.
That'll happen.
I feel that no one should get the cat because.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because
you
want the cat. Anna, what's your understanding of Larson? What does Larson want and feel?
Well, it sounds like Larson, he can't have it, nobody can have it.
Okay. Well, can we think of three possible solutions to this? What's...
I get the cat.
Oh, Larson, can you think of one?
I get the cat right now.
Okay, well, can we think of a third one that maybe we both could live with?
Well, my little peacemaker would probably say, well, I'll call Allison, and then you can play with the cat while I'm at Allison's. And then I get a reminder.
Okay, that's all. That was great. And that's very realistic, because sometimes, you know, kids, obviously, when they're very involved in a conflict, aren't going to, that empathizing step, what's your understanding? Either they're going to just put their slant on it, or they're not going to have been listening. I don't know what they said. I don't care what they, you know, said. But
and of course, Larson, Anna leaves and Larson puts the cat down.
And doesn't want the cat. Right.
And what do you do if they refuse? They say, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what we do.
I don't care.
Well, what have you thought of it? What, I mean, you have to think of an answer.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the thought? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you just try and you can, you know, try and verbalize what they might be feeling. Is this, you know, is this kind of what you might be thinking? Just try. I guess the idea is just to get people to settle down and talk about how they feel before they act out. And in schools, in school, we play with kids. We really just put out on this, you know, something. Talk about what you're thinking. Talk about what you want. Try to find ways that you can both get what you want. So.
Do you also check in after you come to that solution to see how they each feel about the solution?
Well, there's going to be follow-up. Sometimes that's not as, you don't have time for that as much. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, because, you know, it's true with kids, it's true with adults. Some people are more likely to just give in. And just say, okay, fine, that gets back to those ideas of certain kids will smooth it out and not, you know, certain kids will always want to be forcing. And you try and, you got a kid in my room this year who, my goal was to get him not to force when he was involved in a conflict. Every single time he was in a conflict, he had to get his way. He just had to get his way. And I, you know, I kept trying to, you know, KC, you know, sometimes, other kids need to get what they want too. So, you know, you teach the basic needs, you teach how everybody wants something, and then it's other kids need to have a chance to get what they want too. And he, by the end of the year, he did. He understood that better. He was a better self-evaluator. So.
Do you go with the kids so that you show them the graph the bridge and the...
Yes, and it's all up in the room. It's all up in the room. There's a lot of
visuals. Because with a cat, you know, that solution is immediate, but long-term, day-to-day, you know, next time,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that the cat survives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't ask the cat.
Other than body
well,
two cats.
She'll make up her mind, though, you know, and when she doesn't want to be held, she has to go right behind the refrigerator.
Have you ever read the book Duncan and Dolores to your kids? It's about Duncan the cat and Dolores, who comes on a little strong and gentle. It's a little, it might be a good book. It's a really cute picture book.
My kids have talked to me.
Yeah, I have my Sarah, the girl I have. She's not on business, she's 24.
Our son feels a real lack of freedom and power. And, you know, He is so self-centered that he can't see that he truly does have freedom and that responsibility equals freedom. You know, you do your job, you get more freedom, this type of thing, and thus you have more power because you're taking control of your situation. But he just, it's so hard to get through that big school that, you know, this is what you have to do to have power, you know, to grow up. You have to, or as part of growing up, you have to do these things so that you can have the freedom, but take the responsibility. You know, and it's a challenge some days.
And yes, and I really like your point about, and I think it's got to the 3-year-old. I mean, this is situational. I mean, you know, you're not going to get freedom in every single situation. You look for different ways of doing that. So that's just kind of one flow chart. A lot of these different piece curriculums have different tweaks on that, but it's the same premise of getting kids to talk about what they want and how they feel, and then trying to understand what the other person wants and feels, and then coming up with some solutions. And then there are some ground rules like, you know, no swearing, no name calling, and that type of thing. And then trying to get the kids to work with that. But, you know, some schools, I've done a lot of training, and some schools just want to have like their fifth graders trained, or just like 10 fifth graders to work on the playground, and all of a sudden that's going to change the playground. You know, well, no, it's not. It's not. You've got to train everybody, and I think whether it's a school, whether it's a business, whether it's a family, the key is in the relationships present among the fabric among the people. And if they're, we really need to look for ways to build positive experiences with people, because if your relationship is strong with someone, when conflict comes up, and it will, then it can be solved more easily. These strategies really help because they get kids to verbalize how they feel. And people need to be heard. They need to be, just express how they feel. And it's amazing, sometimes they'll come in really hyper recess and then just talk about what they feel. And then the more they talk, they just get over it and earn it. And sometimes they don't. Sometimes there's a real structural, like if somebody always is giving in and always. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, they'll talk it through it. It's like all of a sudden it's not a big deal anymore. Well, that's fine. You can go on the computer first. I don't really care.
And does the bookstore here have that book?
I don't think so, because I had no idea
that you were going to do that.
I had the pen and didn't have a clue.
Is that a book that you would buy? It says here, it says, Helping Children Make These Connections, One of the Goals.
Mm-hmm.
Are there parts of that book you'd share with kids?
This book comes with a teacher's guide, and it's a Black Line Master guide that is actually wonderful. That has, and this is some control theory stuff on quality. It's kind of that same thing. Talking with kids, like this is wonderful. What I have to do to get what I want. Some things I want, and it also talks in here about how you sometimes need to wait for that to happen. I just can't always get it right away. But yes, this is just a teaching guide for planning. And there's a lot of work emphasis on self-evaluation, kind of on here, like keeping up the good work. In order to continue to do this, I will do this.
Yeah, I know when my daughters were in the fifth and sixth grade, I guess, and they were going through the hormonal in my bush, and their personalities kind of changed. I got that book by Dobson on preparing for adolescence, and I actually shared it with them, and it really helped. It has a lot of case studies in there. It helped to read it together and to see that what was going on with them wasn't, unique, that we all kind of go through that, and like giving kids the skills of dealing with the conflict and sharing it, going through the book with them.
And it's just, it's self-esteem, it's common sense, like this, what I have that makes me happy. Mm-hmm. What do you, and that can be done, we do this with kindergartners, what do you have that makes you happy? I have my pet, and just getting, the more psychologically settled and happy one is, then when you deal with conflict, if you have a strong sense of who you are, then that's going to help. So what I've tried to do is kind of paint a picture of a broader kind of view of peacemaking. And there are, set curriculums which have wonderful ideas. And if anyone, would like some of those, I have lots of those resources. But it's also important to put it in the context of what causes conflict and how even adults can, solve it more, deal with conflict more constructively if they understand kind of why it's being caused and how we ourselves deal with it. I mean, I know of those four ways of dealing with conflict, I know which one comes most naturally and which, think about yourself. Are you differently personally as you are professionally? With different people, it's a really interesting thing to think about. So, and same thing with these basic needs. Are your basic needs similar to your significant others? Can you solve those in the same way? And kind of just being able to, analyze yourself and understand your relationships a little better.
Why would a kid be so well behaved in public?
And
at home, I go to places. It's like, can we take your son to the.
They have an odd,
comfort
level with you, and they've learned to they've learned situational to control themselves situationally, and
I think it's comfort and
They often learn what's expected of them in other situations. Mm-hmm. In public, because you're talking, when you're here, you know.
Yeah, that's I think that's one of the biggest of one of my favorite songs. This line goes, "There are a lot of evil people in the world who you could be mean to, but why would they mean to me?" It's this wife is sitting next to her husband, and why do you hurt the people you love the most? I mean, and that's I don't know. That's been true in my family.
Maybe it's
yeah,
you know, parents have an unconditional love, and maybe children, they know that we're going to love them even when they're, you know, causing us great pain. And whereas the person you meet in the public, your teacher or your best friend, isn't necessarily going to love you unconditionally.
Maybe you can only maintain your composure for a certain amount of time. And so finally you get home, and I've had to be on kind of on under in control, and then all of a sudden I itch.
Let the rubber band go.
And the frustration, and you know.
You can't get him to do certain things at home. I mean, I was out with him to this Capitol of Washington, Olympia. They had this session, they showed him how a real session ran, and they interviewed the kids, and they made him chairman of the session, and he just did a perfect job, you know,
mm-hmm.
choosing fairly between the kids, and they're letting one kid overstate over the other.
This is your son?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's amazed great.
And I was just going.
This is my child.
They had the chairman that actually would talk to the, you know, legislators, telling him what the next question was, and he would just glance at it and state the question flawlessly. I'm going, and then you get them all the same day, and it's like a...
Yeah,
so it's just amazing. I wondered how to bring that home.
Right. Well, I think complimenting
time.
Him, or complimenting him and reinforcing what a wonderful job he did there, and what great behavior that is, and building it up in him, and any time that you get positive feedback like that, I think human nature says you'll do that more often. Mm-hmm. So kind of building on that.
How young do they say you can do this conflict bridge? I mean, is it preschool? Can you do it with
preschool? Well, I know we do it in kindergarten. We do it in kindergarten. They've combined a few steps.
Uh-huh.
They simplify.
If someone can verbalize, really.
Well, even just starting with what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you want?
Real
and how do you feel?
A 3 and 4 year old would be more honest and more verbal than if you begin at fifth grade, I think, you know, if
yeah.
they start younger.
Well, it's like, you know, teaching our children strategies, because I don't think we do enough of that in school.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we don't, you know, we were never trained how to parent.
Mm-hmm.
And the more strategies we can teach our kids.
And I'm just amazed, even with upper elementary kids and junior kids, you know, they still start sentences with me. Meaning, I mean, they're so egocentric. It's
mm-hmm.
it's me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that third step is really important. Well, how does the other person feel? You know, how does the other person feel? It's not just you. It's not just me. The other person has feelings too. And I think that the earlier that started, the better. I know we do that in kindergarten.
And relating your feelings to your children, not, you know, this really hurts me. Or,
oh yeah.
You know, I feel.
And using I statements, that's really helped mm-hmm. in my teaching. I.
But at the same time, giving the kids some power and control over what
mm-hmm.
what goes on in their life. This power struggle between parents and kids.
Are they pretty willing to do this, or do some of the kids really fight it? They don't want to sit down.
I think they're willing because it gets to be a kind of a climate. That's just who we are. That's how we do things in our family. That's how we do things in our school. I think the more you can look at it as this is who we are, this is what we believe. You know, there's a whole another. If I knew I was doing this, you know, on belief statements and on mission statements, on coming up with beliefs, on you do that in a classroom, you can do that in a family. Is this what we believe? Well, yes. Well, then when the behavior doesn't go in line with that belief statement, and you see that, do you remember what we agreed upon, how we believe? Do you believe that? Okay, well then, did what happened? How does that compare with what we believe? Do you believe that still? And what we, you know, that's okay.
Transforming a whole society, can I go to that? You said you were in India and you saw that. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of their religious thing? The reason I ask that is my uncle was North Dakota, mm-hmm. Illinois, but he was in the World War II of the Japanese, mainly in conflict with the Japanese on the islands. Mm-hmm. There was an interpretation that they were rather savage compared to other groups. In terms of how they treated their own people and people in Zion and everything. And then it was just brutal stuff. I mean, the Chinese began to hate them early.
Right, the Japanese, yeah.
And so what they decided early on, before they really even got in conflict with them, when they started to engage the Japanese, my uncle was a part of it. He said that they returned all their soldiers directly to Japan. They treated them extremely well, almost like a lesson. Mm-hmm. We're going to treat you this well, and we're going to put you on the boat sending. They were keeping track of people's names. They were fighting some of the same guys several times. But then when they sent them back to Japan, then they hold these classes. It was required in the settlement of the war that they had a class, a one-hour class a day, on morality.
Yeah.
And it transformed a society. So having this in school is the key, mm-hmm. to your thing. I'm just saying,
and involving the parents.
The whole society is transformed now in Japan. It's like they're shocked if somebody died, or shocked if something's made.
Right.
Animals come. You know, mm-hmm. you're concerned about consuming.
Do you have parent groups? I mean, you're doing this in class.
We have parent education groups. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we've trained all the bus drivers. We've trained all the playground supervisors in the district.
But you train the parents themselves, so this is what we're teaching your kids,
mm-hmm.
and this is...
Very much so.
Okay.
Very much so.
It's got to really, you know, be a positive thing for families.
Is this a public school? Yeah.
Yes.
Great.
Yes. So...
Do they make this uniformly across the nation now? Are you part of the program?
There are just different cells of... I mean, we work with a group from the University of Minnesota that solves things. That there are different groups of different peacemaking programs. The whole idea of conflict resolution is really big, especially in high schools, and they get into more formal mediation process, where they have, but the idea of some of the, you know, conflict resolution is a hot topic. I mean, if you want to get any teaching seminar, or you always have stuff like
glasses.
Yeah.
They aren't really institutionalized, you know, like the sort of like the Japanese.
I mean, it's
no, and part of that gets into American society is education is so, it's locally controlled, and there's no national curriculum. Gosh, there's like some states there's no state curriculum. I mean, it's individual districts, and it really...
Some districts have no curriculum.
That's right, yeah.
But the individual
districts... And your comment on what happened in Japan is a wonderful illustration, because, you know, our society is so much more heterogeneous in terms how could we maintain that democratic ideals and instruct that when you know it's really a struggle, so no, this isn't, you know, we have a good organization on the Twin Cities, but I know there's a seat in Seattle because they do a lot of training at one of the colleges in Seattle.
Yeah,
I think it's training.